Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, October 31st. And happy Halloween to you guys out there. And we almost had to need the services of Mason at the beginning of the show today, but it was not to be. A tough loss out in Boston. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, sports newspaper reporter for over a decade. What's up to all you guys out there? Some new listeners out in Sweden this week that reached out. L.O. Quint on Twitter, a great Twitter handle there. Listeners out in the UK as well. Nick's out there. Thanks, brother, or mate, or whatever you say in England. I don't know. Cheerio. Anyway, but spread the word. We're going worldwide here on Locked On Pistons, and I want to thank you guys for listening and spreading the word as well. Today, we're going to be breaking down Tuesday's loss to the Boston Celtics. We're going to talk a little bit about the offense and tell you why Blake Griffin's start, his great start to the season, might have stunted things a little bit for the offense in the near and short term, and long term maybe as well. Later on, we've got the Henry Ellenson news to pass along, as predicted here, as you know. We'll also update you with what's been going on with the Brooklyn Nets since the opener, Wednesday's opponent, tonight's opponent for the Pistons. And at the very end of the show, we're going to hear from Matt Derry of Locked On Lions, the host there, some big Lions news on Tuesday. He has some thoughts. If you listen to Locked On Pistons to get away from the Lions, I completely understand that. No shame in that game, and I apologize. But that's why we are kind of putting this at the very end of the show. So when we get to Matt Derry, if you don't want to hear anything about the Lions, and again, can't blame you for that. Go ahead and maybe just cut off the episode there. But I think it's some good stuff for the Detroit fans out there. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. We are close to 1,000 followers on Locked On Pistons. So spread the word, send us some retweets and all that good stuff. And make another account and follow it from there for all I care. But anyway, also the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Got some good numbers and there as well. The Pistons dropped a tough one on Tuesday night to the Boston Celtics on the road, 108-105, two straight to the Celtics, the very beatable Boston Celtics on Tuesday night. They were primed to lose that one at home, and we've got mixed emotions after this one, right? You like the defense. You like the fight. You didn't like the inbounds pass. You didn't like dropping two in a row to the damn Boston Celtics, but there are some other things I didn't like overall, big picture, and we'll get into that later. I will talk about that pass right now. Blake Richards is a friend of mine, by the way. But Blake Griffin, not Blake Richards, sent the pass out to Ish Smith to start the break with about 11 seconds left in the game, down one with a chance to get things going there. I know what he was doing. I know what Blake Griffin was doing. He was going to lead him, get him on the run, and I understand the thinking. But you don't do that when there's any kind of traffic in the backcourt. You don't do that when there's a defender around. And he made it earlier, another miscommunication on a pass late when Reggie Bullock cut to the basket and Blake threw a pass hard to the wing and no one was there. So a couple of careless turnovers for Blake Griffin, not Blake Richards, late in the game. They got to clean that up. They got to be sure in big moments. You can't risk the minor positives that come out of a risky pass like that and then be risking those huge negatives that come with that. And I'm probably not the only one. I know my old coach Brian reached out and agreed with me on Twitter, reminded you of Adrian Dantley and Vinnie Johnson after hitting heads back in, I believe it was 87 in the playoffs at the Boston Garden, and a couple of concussions probably, but this one with Blake and Ish kind of splayed out on the court after the turnover there kind of reminded you of that. But all in all, for Blake Griffin, a pretty good game, 24 points and 15 rebounds for him. Andre, a little bit maddening with some more of the early post-ups to him. At least we didn't see any three-pointers go up today. Dwayne Casey, I think he cleaned up the post-ups late, as we kind of have seen from him over these last few days, a little bit early, but we're still seeing too much of it in those first quarters, first halves as well. And I hope that Casey isn't watching this like we did for a couple years there, a few years there with Dre when he was 21, 20 years old, and thinking, you know, he's close to making those hook shots. I mean, some of those might go down. They look okay sometimes, but they never go down. They just aren't. It's not an effective play for Andre Drummond to be back to the basket. And there are places when he catches it kind of in that short corner there, if it's a drop-off, he knows what to do with that a little bit. He can score there. But I'm talking about when he's got a big man on his butt, one-on-one, he just doesn't know what to do in those situations. And it's been proven time and time again. And it looks competent sometimes. The hook looks all right. It goes in and out sometimes, but at about year seven of it going in and out, you're just kind of got to think, you know, it's just not going to happen. But still, Andre Drummond had 17 points and 12 rebounds. And again, I feel like I'm probably being too hard on him. That's a decent stat line, very good for most players. But it's become kind of a theme on this show that I'm giving Andre a little bit of a hard time. And then you look, and the stats are pretty good. So I hate to sound like a broken record for some of the Andre defenders out there. And let me know what you think if you got any thoughts on it. But Reggie Bullock and Ish Smith all knocked down some late threes to help get the Pistons back, give them a chance. Three threes, by the way, for Reggie Bullock that hopefully busts him out of this horrific slump he's had to start the season. We will see on that. 16 points overall for Bullock, 13 for Ish Smith, 10 points, by the way, a career high, no doubt, for Bruce Brown. Obviously the best game for him back in his hometown of Boston. Looks like a guy right now who will stay around in Detroit, certainly while Luke Kennard is out with an injury, but maybe even in the long term as well. Although you might have to bite the bullet and send him down from some development at times. The jump shot just looks ridiculously bad. It's just not an NBA jump shot at this point. Going to be a big offseason for him going into year two to get that cleaned up as much as possible. Reggie Jackson and Stanley Johnson, both of those guys pretty much looked out to lunch to me in this one. 31 points on the other side for Kyrie Irving, 10 of 16 from the field, a big third quarter. When Boston pulled away for the first time, 16 points for Jason Tatum, some big buckets for him, 15 for Mook, the familiar face, Marcus Morris, former Piston there. Aaron Baines came back and played a pretty good game. I believe he had about 9 points as well. The threes, 9 for 31 for Boston for 29%. Again, bad shooting for them, poor shooting night. The door was wide open. And how did the Pistons walk through? Well, they didn't. They went 8 for 30. 26.7% from three-point land, and it was worse than that for most of the game until that late barrage from Reggie and then one late deep three from Ish Smith as well. Langston Galloway, the DNP off the bench, I do not know what's up with that. Your guess is as good as mine. I'm thinking his defensive struggles early on in the season probably caught up to him, which is okay. Dwayne Casey has to establish that tough defense for the Pistons. Can't be any excuses on that end. Because it's probably it is an easier short-term job than the offense that the Pistons have to work on that Casey has to install. And we will talk about that after the break. The Pistons at Brooklyn tonight, at Philly on Saturday night, the same teams over and over again. And then Miami at home on Monday, then back on the road at the end of next week, Orlando and Atlanta. So certainly an easier week next week after a tough week here for the Detroit Pistons. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now here on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. And our demographic is 98% males with more education and earning power than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about the Brooklyn Nets, tonight's opponent. We're also going to pass along the Henry Ellenson news and hear from Matt Derry, the host of Locked On Lions, about the big Lions move on Tuesday. But Blake Griffin, we talked about this last week at length, and rightfully so, about his great start to the season, an unbelievable beginning as the Pistons got 4 wins. He dropped 50 on Philly in an overtime win. But I'm beginning to think that maybe that wasn't a great thing for this offense in the long term, or at least it creates a whole new set of challenges for Dwayne Casey to figure out what the ultimate Pistons offense is going to look like. Now, Blake Griffin's ISOs have been the best part of the offense so far this year. His post-ups, mostly with him scoring or getting to the free throw line, and you play off that a little bit with some kickouts to some shooters and some drop-offs to Andre Drummond as well. Like I said, best part of the offense so far. But guess what? You know, there's nothing modern about that, and there's reasons for that. There's nothing free-flowing about that, and it works sometimes. It works a lot of times. And like I said, today, October 31st, it is their best option for getting a bucket at any given time. So I know that what I'm saying might sound a little bit contradictory and a little bit ridiculous, but we got to be building towards the long term here to what Dwayne Casey's vision and what his vision of the modern NBA should be. So I don't know that that ultimately is going to get you anywhere. If that's the focal point of your offense is Blake Griffin's post-ups from, you know, 17 feet away from the basket. When I watched this Pistons team, especially tonight, I thought that they were too easy to defend. That's kind of been the staple of this team so far in the early going, other than in Philadelphia when they were free-flowing a little bit more, playing with pace, running the ball up and down the court, passing the ball up the court as well. Look, Blake's going to make tough a tough night for one guy, couple guys, if that's your offense. He's going to make living hell. Ask Jared Dudley in the opener. Ask poor Robert Covington or Mike Masula. Ask some of those guys what they felt like after going up against Blake all night. Or Jaylen Brown tonight. Ask them what they thought. I'm sure that they had a pretty rough night and are in the ice bath after the game. But the other four guys in the court are pretty much resting and relaxing. Part of a good offense is that it's taxing to defend. It's very, not only are you getting buckets, not only is it efficient, but you're wearing down the other teams. We've talked about this in the past, about Rip Hamilton and the going to work Pistons. It was not a great offense by any means, but what it did, one of the positives about it, is when you ran Rip Hamilton off of those screens, it wore teams down physically. It made one guy really dead tired after every game, or two or three guys that took turns defending him, and also set a physical tone for the rest of the team. You know Ben Wallace was going to go after offensive rebounds, making his guy who defend him and keep him off the glass, his life was going to be hell as well. Rasheed Wallace also as well. He'll back you down, make that guy's life a living hell at times as well. Some Chauncey Billups ISOs and using his big body against smaller point guards, that made him tough to defend as well. There was a whole sorts of things that, you know, while it wasn't pretty and it didn't result in baskets a lot, there were stretches of not baskets. I would say that there were some positives that were underlying from that group that came out of them, playing a certain type of way offensively. This year and so far with this era, the problem with this offense is there's not enough ball movement, an effective sideline to sideline ball movement. They're not making the defense work. If tonight, watch Brooklyn, especially knowing that they're going up against the Pistons team on a back-to-back. When they are going and when they are tough, it's like the poor man's version of the Houston Rockets. In some ways, they're making you move around the court as a defense. You got to shoot around the right wing with the ball. You got to be over here kind of helping when LaVert or Dinwiddie might drive a little bit if your guy's over on the left wing. And then, they get a step on the defender. You might be inching towards helping a little bit. But guess what? There's a cross-court pass to your guy, and Joe Harris is on the wing there. You got to bust your butt from the middle of the court all the way and contest that shot. And you're probably not going to do a very good job of that. And you got to cover a lot of distance in a short amount of time. It's difficult to defend. It's not just watching Blake Griffin go to work or watching some two-man game. It's five people. It's slashing and it's making a drive and passing, but it's not just dropping it off to the next guy. You're making passes that aren't just one pass away. Don't just drive, get stopped, and kick it to the guy next to you. Make a pass across the court. Make the defense move quite a bit. The weird part is, I'm not saying it's a selfish offense, what the Pistons are doing right now. And actually, sometimes they're overpassing, but it's not effective passing. They're passing it to the guy next to you. They're handing the ball off to Andre Drummond in the lane when, you know, I can remember a time when Stanley Johnson was right in the middle of the lane, standing there, and he's trying to make a pass to Andre Drummond, who's sitting there in the short corner, when all he's got to do is go up and score. You're a fourth-year player now, Stanley Johnson. Go up and lay the ball in. Go dunk on someone. Do something. And I get it, again, on the Blake ISOs. It's effective, and I believe that some form of that should be in the ultimate finished product offensively. You got to use that skill set. But with Blake's unique skill set, and Andre Drummond's limitations and his unique skills as well, another guy with a unique skill set, you can't just throw in a plug-and-play Toronto offense from last year that they drew up for DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. You can't just copycat what Houston does with James Harden. You don't have James Harden. So it's going to be hard. This is a big challenge. I know that Dwayne Casey wants to bring some of his principles, some of his, you know, the shot spectrum, some of the other things that were brought along with a guard-oriented offense, but we're seeing it. We're seeing what the critics were saying and why the Pistons' ceiling is still somewhat limited with this team. Hard to take guys that aren't modern NBA players and Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond and turn a modern offense out of that. It's difficult, and I don't know how to do it. I don't know what they're going to do. You got to get that ball movement. You got to get the shooters in position to hit open in rhythm shots. If you're going to try to shoot a lot of threes, which they should try to be doing, and they also have to play to their strengths of their best players, which is sometimes contrary to some of those things, contrary to ball movement and pace as well. By the way, these things are foreign concepts to Reggie Jackson, and he's one of your best players, and he's also pretty stubborn. So you got to figure out a way to make it work with him and fit him into what you're doing and fit what you're doing to guys like him. It's not an easy job, but you can't look at this loss to the Celtics, who, I'll say it again, they played poorly. They shot poorly. They were ripe for a loss tonight at home. The Pistons should have won this game if they shot a little better throughout those four quarters. And I'm not just saying knock down those shots, those 30 shots they threw up. I'm saying get better shots. Reggie Bullock and Ish Smith hitting those long, long three-pointers late in the game. And hopefully that kicks up Reggie Bullock's confidence. I'm not saying there's never anything wrong with making shots. I'm just saying that don't think that that's the way that, this needs to be done. There were not a lot of in-rhythm, open three-point shots taken by the Pistons tonight. Dwayne Casey talked about the number of three-pointers that he wants. Well, it's not just that. You want open looks, and you don't want contested threes. You don't want bad threes going up. I thought there were a lot of bad threes going up for the Pistons tonight. So we need to see that new direction. We need to have this team kind of unlearn some of the bad habits of the past. And Dwayne Casey and his staff need to be innovative in creative ways. And not only drawing things up, but getting it out on the court too as well. I think that that's probably the toughest part of running a quote-unquote free-flowing offense like Dwayne Casey is, because guys are going to revert to their old ways. It's not like you can just draw up a play and they're going to follow it. You're teaching principles. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be growing pains, and unfortunately, I think that we're going to have a lot of nights like tonight where it's going to be ugly offensively, especially early on in the season. So I don't know. 4-2, you feel very good about the record. You feel pretty good about some of the schedule coming up, but I'm not seeing an offense right now that long-term makes me excited about the prospects for the Detroit Pistons this season. So let me know what you think. Do you have any contrary opinions to that? Call and leave a voice message, reach out to me on social media, or just call and text the Google voice number, 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666. Vinny Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, 810-666-1546. Let me know your thoughts. But Locked On NBA, the podcast, never went away, and it is still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30 minutes on everything going on around the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. New guests on the show as well, Sam Amick of The Athletic, Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated. Those guys are making regular appearances. This is a show that you've got to check up. Good stuff daily from Locked On NBA. But next, we're going to talk about the Brooklyn Nets, the Henry Ellenson news, and also going to hear from Matt Derry with his thoughts on the big Lions move. That's next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. And the Henry Ellenson news today. It was reported on Tuesday that the Pistons did not pick up the option for the fourth season for Henry Ellenson out of Marquette. He's in his third season right now. They did, however, pick up year three for Luke Kennard. So we're talking about not this season, but next season. So Henry Ellenson, still a member of the Detroit Pistons. Those decisions were made in advance of today's deadline on Wednesday, the 31st, that the Pistons had to pick up those rookie option contracts there. So Luke Kennard will be on the books for the Detroit Pistons for next season. It was a no-brainer for Luke Kennard, absolutely. Any player that's average or above average or anything like that, you're going to pick up those rookie options. Rookie contracts are valuable to have, unless you have a flop like Henry Ellenson has been so far throughout his career. Now, it was possible that the front office could have seen enough in the potential of Henry Ellenson to roll the dice and keep him around for a fourth season, but there just hasn't been enough there. So like I said, Henry Ellenson's still a member of the Pistons for the entirety of this season and will become an unrestricted free agent going into year four. I talked about this a couple weeks ago as a bold call of mine coming into the season that the Pistons would do just this. But as it got closer and I got to thinking about it and reading some more about what his value is, it's not really that bold of a call at all. So I'm not going to pat myself on the back too much about this. But what does it mean? Of course, we said Henry Ellenson's still on the team, still a member of the front court depth that the Pistons have. And at some point, you got to believe through injury or whatever else, he's going to get some points, some time to get some minutes and to see what happens. It just means that no longer have him going forward and going into next year. So he'll be an unrestricted free agent. What does that do for Henry Ellenson's confidence this year? It's an interesting question. And a lot of guys, you could see this as being something that would light a fire under them. Maybe get some, if you see the light at the end of the tunnel of your contract, you know it's going to kick you in your butt a little bit and get things going. I just don't think that Henry Ellenson is, he's noted as a gym rat. He's known as a guy who's just putting in more time than anyone else in the offseason to try to make his game better. And we see that the skills, you know, are certainly there or appear to be there at times, just not in game speed, not in NBA games. So I don't think that it's going to be a positive for him. If anything, I think it's going to be a negative for him this season, just to know that, hey, I'm a member of this team and they don't want me. And I know that's a harsh way of putting it, but that's exactly what the Pistons are saying right now. And it's going to be something that might cause a little bit of tension. And if anything, it's going to hurt the confidence of Henry Ellenson going forward. Now, I don't have any reason to believe he won't be a pro about it. And of course, he's got all the motivation in the world to finish off strongly, to be known as a professional around the league, to practice hard, to show up for all the meetings, all that good stuff, because so that maybe he can make himself more marketable as an unrestricted free agent to other NBA teams, other teams that have G League spots. Sadly, that's something that you have to be thinking about if you're Henry Ellenson, or as Danny LaRue wrote the other day on The Athletic. He talked about how Henry Ellenson might be a great European player someday, a guy who's over there whose deficiencies might be a little bit less able to be exposed, and a guy who can be an offensive player over there for many years. So maybe Henry Ellenson could have a nice career out in Europe. Now, we're not ready to close the book on him. We'll see how this year transpires, and we'll see if he gets some chances going forward. But the downside for the Pistons, they're gambling a little bit here. There's always a chance that they could get Mario Hezonja'd on this, and this was exactly what the Orlando Magic did. And now that was for a little bit more money, because Hezonja was a top 10 pick, whereas Henry Ellenson was about 19 or so, if my memory is correct. But Hezonja went out after this happened and had a great season, got a chance for the Orlando Magic last year, scored right around 10 points a game, became one of their key players. And at about midseason, it became apparent that Orlando had made a mistake. And by losing his rights for year four and having him go into unrestricted free agency, they really gave away in what could have been an important trade chip, if not a roster piece for them the next season. Hezonja, as we know, went to the New York Knicks in the offseason and got a nice little contract from them. So will that be the same case with the Pistons? I doubt it. Certainly probably not, but we will see. But speaking of the Brooklyn Nets and teams in New York, the Nets are hosting the Pistons for another 7:30 p.m. start tonight. Not like the 7 p.m. starts we get in Detroit, so we'll be staying up a little bit later to give you the podcast just like we are tonight here in Detroit. Although I will be in Allen Park with the Lions throughout the day, so maybe I can get home by tip-off and pass out the candy to all your kids as well as Halloween commences. But the Nets, how's it going with them? The answer is not good since the Pistons played them. They are 2-5, really struggling right now. It's a team, however, that's built to be tough in a lot of ways, but especially when a team comes in on a back-to-back on the road. Defending those three-pointers and getting after those guys all over the court is something that's going to be tough for the Detroit Pistons with tired legs. They got hammered by the Knicks pretty bad on Monday night, but that was in town, obviously, had a day off to rest, so you'd think that physically the Nets will be ready. Jared Allen, by far someone who I was plugging as having a very good season, so far has not made the leap that I thought he would in year two. He's getting 10-7 so far. But the talk of the Nets, and we saw it on opening night, Caris LeVert, who had an outstanding start to the season. He had only 4 points against the Knicks on Monday, his worst game of the year by far, so we will see how he bounces back. What's new with the Nets compared to opening night? Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is back from injury. He's had a lot of success against the Pistons in the past. Shabazz Napier is healthy and playing for his new team, along with Alan Crabb, who missed the opener as well. So a much more talented team than the Pistons played on opening night and got escaped, really, with a win in a game that they probably didn't deserve to win in some ways. Brooklyn, however, in a surprising stat for me, they are 2.5-point favorites at home for this game against the Pistons. Again, that line surprises me, but I do guess that Vegas kind of knows what they're doing there. The 4-1 Pistons are 2.5-point dogs on the road to the 2-5 Nets. Certainly anyone, an unbiased observer, would agree that the Pistons have a more talented roster than Brooklyn Nets. But I do think that this line makes sense. I thought that before I looked at it, I thought the Pistons might be like 2 or 3-point favorites in this game. But I think that Vegas is smart about the back-to-back and everything. They take all these things into consideration. So I'm going to call this one a stay away for you gamblers out there. I was all ready before I looked to say bet on the Nets if the Pistons were favored by 3 points or so. But now I'm all flustered from Vegas being correct about the line, and I don't even know what to think. But speaking of flustered, Lions fans got some big news on Tuesday, and here's Matt Derry, the host of Locked On Lions, with a little bit of a reaction to it.
Hey, Locked On Podcast family, Matt Derry, host of Locked On Lions here in Detroit on the Locked On Podcast Network. Big news of the day here on October 30th, trade deadline Tuesday, is that the Lions have parted ways with Golden Tate. Their best receiver over the last 4+ seasons, 90 catches every year, is gone. the Lions have elected to send him to the Philadelphia Eagles on Tuesday for a third-round draft pick. What does this mean for the Lions? It's pretty simple. I don't like it. As host of Locked On Lions, we've tried for the last couple of years to tell you that Bob Quinn, the general manager in year three, was trying to build something to win right away. And he said that as much after he fired Jim Caldwell after his second season. Turns out in year three, the Lions got off to a lousy start, had a bad August, had a bad camp, had a bad preseason, had a bad start to the season, and now sit at 3-4 in the division. So for many of you listening right now, you're probably saying to yourself, well, then why wouldn't they trade Golden Tate? Free agent at the end of the year, probably not coming back. You got to get something for him. They held out for a third-round pick, and they got it. Well, I look at it a different way. I think this really stunts the growth of the offense. This was the guy that Matthew Stafford relied on for 4 years to get him yardage after the catch, to make big plays. They're going to Minnesota on Sunday. The Lions won in Minnesota 2 years ago because Golden Tate made one of the most unbelievable individual effort plays you'll ever see on a football field. And now he's gone. So what's next for the Detroit Lions? It's simple. They rack up draft picks. In my opinion, I don't think they're good enough now to win this division, even though they're in a bad division in the NFC North and only a game out of first place behind Chicago. And now they got to go to Minnesota and Chicago back-to-back without arguably their best offensive weapon. It does mean more targets, hopefully, for Kenny Golladay, a good young receiver, but he's only been targeted 3 times over the last 2 weeks. That has to change. Has to change. And it does mean that Marvin Jones likely will see more double teams. In the slot, the Lions have Brandon Powell, an up-and-coming UDFA rookie that they like, and also TJ Jones. But I think this is going to be something that hurts the growth of the offense, which has been better the last few weeks in running the football. For Golden Tate, an opportunity to go win a Super Bowl and be on another contender like he was in Seattle before he came to Detroit. That's the latest from Detroit as the Lions get Golden Tate. My name is Matt Derry. Thanks for listening. The latest from Detroit here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Thanks to Matt for that. And if you are not listening to the Locked On Lions podcast, you should definitely give it a try. And I want to thank you guys for giving us a try as well. Give us a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Check out the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattSchuch. And give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. Moving up the iTunes charts gets us in front of some more eyeballs and earballs as we try to grow the podcast as much as we can this season. But happy Halloween to you guys out there. Enjoy the game against the Brooklyn Nets tonight. Hopefully that's not a scary one in New York for the Detroit Pistons, and we will see how that goes. We'll be back tomorrow with some reaction to that. We'll look ahead to the weekend as well. But this is your host, Matt Schuch, saying thanks for listening, and happy Halloween, everyone.